let's talk about is recorded and produced in Treaty 1 territories, on the original lands of the Anishinaabe, Cree, Oji-Cree, Dakota, and Dene peoples, and on the homeland of the Métis Nation. Thank you very much for listening. Hello and welcome to the last like real episode of Let's Talk About. Next week will be kind of a post-Christmas finale episode where I wrap things up and, you know, send this podcast on its way, send the show on its way. But I am so excited for today's episode because this is something I thought I would never see in my lifetime. It isn't fully operational by any stretch of the imagination, but as longtime listeners of the show will know, part of kind of the messaging, specifically in the last couple years, but stretching all the way back to one of the first episodes I did was on the carbon tax and how that operates, and talking a little bit about climate change and climate disaster, and kind of the first special or series I did on the show was the We Live in a Cyberpunk Nightmare series, but the subject of how people get our power has always been a big topic, and this recent news coming out of California is so massive that, I talked to my girlfriend about it and she didn't know how specifically this science worked, but just explaining that this could forever change how we do everything, how everything is powered, how cheap and affordable it is, providing this utility to the world that is completely clean and, could very quickly supplant oil and gas and coal as a mechanism, an accessible mechanism for places that don't have, the green infrastructure that a province like Manitoba has, or access to the rivers and lakes that Manitoba has, or the land that some African nations have to place solar panels and wind farms. And this is the topic of nuclear fusion. So I'm going to read directly. This is from the New York Times. And this is an article by, I'll link it in the show notes, but it's the article, "Scientists Achieve Nuclear Fusion Breakthrough with Blast of 192 Lasers." And it's by Kenneth Chang. So shout out to Kenneth Chang for your article. It's very good, and it gets the point across very well, but direct from the article. "Scientists studying fusion energy at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory in California announced on Tuesday that they had crossed a long-awaited milestone in reproducing the power of the sun in a laboratory. That sparked public excitement as scientists have for decades talked about how fusion, the nuclear reaction that makes stars shine, could provide a future source of bountiful energy. The results announced on Tuesday, is the first fusion reaction in a laboratory setting that actually produced more energy than it took to start the reaction. That's a huge piece of this. We have kind of achieved fusion before, that we've achieved the same kind of reaction as a fusion reaction, but it always comes at a low yield. You pump a lot of energy to start the reaction, and then the output is always has always been lower, but this time scientists were able to put in energy and get out more energy, which is massive. It's a massive breakthrough. Very quickly, it's very different from nuclear fission. Fission is when you split an atom and that releases, it causes a series of reactions that, you know, basically it, you split the atom and it releases all of this energy, and that causes a lot of reactions that generate a lot of heat and create steam, which power turbines. Like, this is how nuclear power plants operate. It's how a nuclear bomb operates. You split an atom and it releases a ton of energy. Fusion is different. Nuclear fusion is a reaction where two or more atoms are combined to form one or more different atoms, or atomic nuclei and subatomic particles, neutrons and protons. The difference in mass between the reactant and product, so the reactants is the starting pieces and the product is the piece that's produced, is manifested as either the release or absorption of energy. The difference in mass arises due to the difference in nuclear binding energy between the atomic nuclei before and after the reaction. Nuclear fusion is the process that powers active or main sequence stars and other high magnitude stars where large amounts of energy are released. So you put these two things together and it causes a reaction that releases a ton of energy. You put these two pieces together and the subatomic particles just kind of break apart. Nuclear fusion is a process that produces atomic nuclei lighter than iron 56 or nickel 62, which generally release energy. Relatively small mass and relatively large binding energy per nucleon. But you know, to take all the scientific jargon out of it, essentially what this does, instead of breaking fission, is to create a fissure. You break something apart. Fusion is you put things together, and those, by putting those two things together, the reaction of those two things fusing together sheds off and releases a whole bunch of energy. And this is how stars kind of perpetuate themselves, the reactions that happen within a star. But back to the article. Quote, "This is such a wonderful example of a possibility realized, a scientific milestone achieved, and a road ahead to the possibilities for clean energy," Arati Prabhakar, the White House science advisor, said during a news conference on Tuesday morning at the Department of Energy's headquarters in Washington, D.C. Quote, and even deeper understanding of the scientific principles that are applied here, close quote. If fusion can be deployed on a large scale, it would offer an energy source devoid of the pollution and greenhouse gases caused by the burning of fossil fuels and the dangerous long-lived radioactive waste created by current nuclear power plants, which use the splitting of uranium to produce energy. That's nuclear fission. Within the sun and stars, fusion continually combines hydrogen atoms into helium, producing sunlight and warmth that bathes the planet. In experimental reactors, the laser labs on Earth, fusion lives up to its reputation as a very clean energy source. So the production, so taking hydrogen, and just the basic science of this, it takes four hydrogen atoms to create a helium atom. So it's 4H to 1HE. The interesting thing, though, when you combine hydrogen to make helium, it doesn't use all of the mass. And, you know, the law of the conservation of mass, you cannot create or destroy mass in the universe. You can only transfer its shape. You know, you can only transfer it to different forms. So the exact number is that the mass of one helium atom is 0.71% of the original mass of the four hydrogen that it used to create that helium. So all the fraction, the mass that is the remainder of the mass, like 20-something percent, is released as energy. You put these four things together, they fuse into a helium atom, and everything left over just, it's basically, it's neutrons and protons, and those things are energy, and they just leave. They are shedded by the reaction, and they are just pure energy. But again, back to the article. There was always a nagging caveat, however, in fusion reactions, or man-made fusion reactions. In all of the efforts by scientists to control the unruly power of fusion, their experiments consumed more energy than the fusion reactions generated. That changed at 1:03 a.m. on December 5th, when 192 giant lasers at the laboratory's National Ignition Facility blasted a small cylinder about the size of a pencil eraser that contained a frozen nubbin of hydrogen encased in diamond. The laser beams entered at the top and bottom of the cylinder, vaporizing it. That generated an inward onslaught of X-rays that compressed the BB-sized fuel pellet of deuterium and tritium, the heavier forms of hydrogen. So the lasers came in, vaporized the cylinder, and caused a whole bunch of X-rays to collapse in on the core, which is the dense hydrogen, which then crushed the dense hydrogen, essentially. But compress that hydrogen together to force it to become helium. In a brief moment lasting less than 100 trillionths of a second, 2.05 megajoules of energy, roughly the equivalent of a pound of TNT, bombarded the hydrogen pellet. Out flowed a flood of neutron particles, the product of fusion, which carried about 3 megajoules of energy, a factor of 1.5 in energy gain. So they put 2.05 megajoules of energy into it by the collapsing, you know, like the force of think of when a stick of TNT, a pound of TNT explodes, that went in to crush that hydrogen and turn it into helium, and then the release of all of the neutron particles that were not part of the mass. Remember, it takes four hydrogen atoms to make one helium atom, and the helium is 0.71% of the original mass. All of the rest of that mass is released, and the neutrons that come out of that are the energy that is expended. And that created 3 megajoules of energy. So that 3 megajoules of energy that was released can be converted to just under a kilowatt hour. So a kilowatt that is expended over an hour. The average household uses 30 kilowatts. So 10 of those reactions can power a house for a day. That is how much energy we are talking about. It seems small, and it seems that you think of this tiny little cylinder that you shine a bunch of lasers at, it creates basically 1/30 of your power demands of your house for a day. 30 of those little things can create enough power to power the average household for a day, which I think is absolutely insane. But again, back to the article. This crossed the threshold line that laser fusion scientists call ignition, the dividing line where the energy generated by fusion equals the energy of the incoming lasers that start the reaction. Quote, you see one diagnostic and you think maybe that's not real, and then you start to see more and more diagnostics rolling in, pointing to the same thing, said Annie Critcher, a physicist at Livermore, who described reviewing the data after the experiment as the experiment. It's a great feeling. The successful experiment finally delivers the ignition goal that was promised when construction of the National Ignition Facility started in 1997. When operations began in 2009, however, the facility hardly generated any fusion at all, an embarrassing disappointment after $3.5 billion of investment from the federal government. In 2014, Livermore scientists finally reported some success, but the energy produced was minuscule, the equivalent of what a 60-watt light bulb consumes in 5 minutes. Progress over the next few years was slight and small. Then, in August last year, the facility produced a much larger burst of energy, 70% as much energy as the laser light energy. In an interview, Mark Herrmann, program director for weapons physics and design at Livermore, said the researchers then performed a series of experiments to better understand the surprising August success, and they worked to bump up the energy of lasers by almost 10% and improve the design of the hydrogen targets. Those are the little cylinders. The first laser shot at 2.05 megajoules was performed in September, and the first try produced 1.02 megajoules of fusion energy. Moreover, analysis showed that the spherical pellet of hydrogen was not squeezed evenly, and some of the hydrogen essentially squirted out the side and did not reach fusion temperatures. The scientists made some adjustments, and they believed would work better. So to construct the, they didn't compress the hydrogen evenly, so the reactions weren't as powerful as they could be, as excess energy or excess atoms or subatomic particles were able to leak out before they were able to reach the appropriate temperature to be released as fusion energy. So, quote, "The prediction ahead of the shot was that it could go up a factor of two," Dr. Herrmann said. "In fact, it went up a little bit more than that," close quote. The main purpose of the National Ignition Facility is to conduct experiments to help the United States maintain its nuclear weapons. That makes the immediate implications for producing power tentative. Fusion would be essentially an emission-free source of power and would help reduce the need for power plants burning coal and natural gas, which pumps billions of tons of planet-warming carbon dioxide into the atmosphere every year. But it will take quite a while before fusion becomes available on a widespread practical scale, if ever. Probably decades, Kimberly S. Boodle, the director of Lawrence Livermore, said during the Tuesday news conference. Not 6 decades, I don't think. It's not 5 decades, which is what we used to say. I think it's moving into the foreground, and probably with concerted effort and investment, a few decades of research on the underlying technologies could put us in a position to build a power plant. Most climate scientists and policymakers say that to achieve that goal of limiting warming to 2 degrees Celsius, or even more ambitious target of 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming, the world must reach net zero emissions by 2050. The article goes on to talk a lot more about the National Ignition Facility, but you know, the article will be in the show notes. I'm just sitting here just amazed at, you look at it from, you look at the raw numbers, right? And it's hard to get the scale of what this is and to get an understanding of how important this actually is. You know, not many people know what 2.05 megajoules of energy really is. They give the pound of TNT example. But people don't, when you read articles like this, you see these numbers and it's hard to parse and it's hard to know exactly what that means. Like, I had to do a little bit of digging to figure out a way to exemplify this in an understandable way. You know, converting megajoules to kilowatts, and then looking at how many kilowatts the average house uses in a year and converting that down to a month and then converting that down to the average day, and still, it's something difficult to wrap your head around how such a little thing, how a tiny little pellet of hydrogen, well, not pure hydrogen, obviously these are denser versions of hydrogen, and even that is something that, you know, deuterium and tritium, not a lot of people, you look at that and you think, like, what, is that some kind of ore from Minecraft or something you mine in RuneScape? But it's this tiny little, a little BB. Anyone who shot a BB gun before, you know what I'm talking about, how small that is. And it's this very dense form, these two components that are very dense forms of hydrogen. And it's so difficult to think about and turn that idea over in your head that a tiny little BB like that, you take 30 of those in these little glass, or these little diamond cylinders. That's part of the issue, is they're diamond and it gets destroyed in the process. But how 30 of those in a reaction like this could power your house uninterrupted for an entire day. You're just going about your day, and that is a whole day just off of this pure, clean energy. It does not, you know, it's just releasing energy. It's just creating helium. Helium is we're actually running out of helium, by the way. You might have seen helium prices going up in the last couple of years because we have a helium shortage here on Earth. But hydrogen is one of the most plentiful. It is the basic component. It is literally number one on the table, you know, the periodic table. Hydrogen is everywhere. We are trying to use hydrogen in to create fuels that we can burn cleanly, because the reactions that get hydrogen to release, or using hydrogen, you know, now I'm going to talk about hydrogen batteries, but hydrogen batteries essentially operate, or hydrogen as a fuel source, takes in oxygen, and it essentially uses oxygen as an ignition source. And a hydrogen-based fuel, the byproduct is water. Interestingly, it's a similar reaction to what happens in a conventional, it's a byproduct of the reaction in an internal combustion engine. You're the engine that's probably in the car that most of you listening drive, that uses explosions, you know, of gasoline to power an engine, literally combustion in the engine to keep it running and injecting fuel into the engine. Sometimes you'll be sitting there, and during the summer you can see water coming out of the tailpipe. It's not because you got water in there somehow. It's just a byproduct of the reaction. And hydrogen fuels, their only byproduct is water. It does not create carbon dioxide. It doesn't create methane. It doesn't create any of the greenhouse gases. Because it is so early on in the periodic table, the reactions that how the pieces fit together and how the elements break apart in those reactions burns cleanly, only producing water as a byproduct. You know, these are the things that are right there we can grasp that work cleanly, that do not create greenhouse gases that contribute to, you know, the warming of the earth and the warming of our oceans and the destabilization of global climates. Like, you know, we had a week ago, this is weather technically, but, you know, a week ago we had 0 degrees, 1 degree, now it's minus 20. And this winter is very different from last winter, and last summer is different from the summer before by the leaps and bounds. We're still seeing crazy changes in long-term climate. We're seeing storm cells and wildfires. Last year was the most wildfires on record, even though we didn't see any here in Manitoba. Still the most wildfires on record across the globe. Like, fuels like this, you know, fusion energy, hydrogen fuel, are ways in which we can really drastically change how much carbon we emit. How, you know, without significantly changing our lives, I harp on this point all the time. The vast majority of the carbon emissions in the world come from power generation, manufacturing, and shipping. Making things, moving those things around, and making sure those things have power to run. Those are the polluters. And if we can take one of those off the field, the power generation, if we can take that off the field, that makes the shipping and manufacturing even cleaner than they were before in isolation, because they require energy to run. They require fuel to run. And that requiring that fuel and where you get that energy from adds on some more carbon emissions. If you can use fusion or you can use hydrogen fuel to power the shipping freighters or the trucks that drive across country to move things around and ship them from manufacturing plants to stores, that's going to reduce the emissions. And, you know, you're going to be able to generate power through fusion and solar and things to power manufacturing plants, so we can continue to use the manufacturing plants that we already use. It's not going to change how our products are made. Doesn't really drastically have to change all that much for us to meet those emissions targets, for us to hit net zero, for us to prevent any further warming of the planet, or, you know, keeping off from those targets. It is so easy. It is such a small thing, and we keep getting told by politicians and business leaders and lobbyists that it's going to be this wild, radical change in our day-to-day lives. But it's things like this breakthrough in fusion technology that are really going to change the world. It's really, you know, our lives are not going to significantly change in a green economy, in a net zero world. It's not. You're still going to go and probably fuel up your internal combustion engine car, but you're not going to be using gasoline. You're going to be using hydrogen fuel, or you're going to have an electric car that runs on a battery. You're going to be warming your home with geothermal energy, or you're going to be in a place not like Manitoba, because Manitoba, we don't really have this problem because Manitoba hydro is hydroelectric power. But if you're like in Saskatchewan or Alberta or BC, you're going to be, you know, powering your home through solar, through wind energy, through fusion energy, through geothermal energy. Your day-to-day life is not going to change very much because we are pushing forward with these alternatives, with these solutions that are not going to radically change where we are and what we're doing and how we're doing things. And if you take anything away from this show and the lifetime of this show, first off, knowing what's in the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, I did an entire series on exploring the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, but also that the green future, that our future within the world, the era of climate disaster and climate change is not a death sentence. We are going to be able to do this. We're going to do this together. We're going to be able to make it. And it's not going to require these massive changes that people keep telling us we're going to have to make. They're going to be very small. They're going to be minor. They're going to be barely noticeable. You know, companies like Suncor are already making that transition. Shell's already making that transition. You know, we're funding new projects. We have new startups that are creating things like tulip turbines and climate recapture cells and technology. We have large government organizations that are putting forward fusion technology and hydrogen fuels. We're doing these things that are going to maintain the status quo, maintain how we're doing, living our lives, and the way we get things and the way we do things and the stuff that we have. And it's not going to be this earth-shattering revelation. You're not going to wake up one day and, you know, every oil derrick's going to be turned off and you're going to be walking everywhere and you're not going to be able to, you know, get a pencil because you can't use graphite anymore. You're not going to be able to, you're going to have to scale down your technology. You're not going to be able to eat meat anymore, whatever. Those days are not coming because we don't need them to come, because we have these other solutions that are so much more effective that don't need to change our lives. All right, that will do it for this episode today. Next week is going to be the last episode, and I think it's just going to be a really low-key time because it's going to be post-Christmas. So, if you're listening live on 101.5 UMFM, keep the dial on 101.5. You got some great songs and great shows coming up right after this one. If you're listening on Spotify, thank you very much for your download. Catch me this Thursday on The Hockey Show with Teebs, 5:30 to 6:30 here on 101.5 UMFM. And as always, have yourselves a wonderful, wonderful week. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. And I will see you next week for the finale.